When Americans settled in the Philippines, they brought the Jeep. And when Americans left, Filipinos converted the Jeep into a longer version of itself. People quickly jumping off these bus-like modes of transportation, and they give their fare to the man hanging off the back of the bus like he's riding a dumpster truck. And the drivers are infamously aggressive. And somehow, this polluting, imposing thug of the road is a symbol of Filipino culture. This imported, modern American product of industry is a symbol for Filipino culture. What is a better symbol for Filipino identity? Early Spanish colonizers virtually eliminated Filipino identity. Europeans were reluctant to treat the people whom they encountered on equal terms. And this is why colonial powers sought to dilute and suppress any practices that seemed frivolous, shallow, or idolatrous. One way Roman Catholics culturally bombed the Southeast Asian islands was by forcefully placing the Philippines under the rule of the Diocese of Mexico. This way, Spanish and Mexican culture flooded the Philippines and overwhelmed their culture. And the Philippines, after all, is named after King Philip II of Spain. Another method the Spaniards used to reconstruct their social memory involved monks rewriting the history textbooks that purposefully portrayed Filipinos as primitive and uncivilized. This is not too different than how Christians eventually came to understand Jewish customs. Burnt offerings God does not desire. But Jesus offered a body as a final sacrifice. The author of Hebrews might as well walk up to Jewish people and say that your sacred customs, your spiritual practices, are nothing. It is a pale shadow compared to what God is doing through us. It is passages like this, like our epistle today, that early Spaniards used to justify what they were doing, their tyrannical rule. They really believed that they were constrained with love. But I wonder if Spaniards and Filipinos ever read the Magnificat together. In Luke today, we have this song, and it's attributed to Mary. And in this song, God says he will feed the hungry, and the rich will be sent away empty. What promise would the Filipinos hear? This is a song of hope, and yet nearly everything in this song, everything that Mary said would happen, has not happened. Israel is left in ruin. The poor are still starving. The rich have their full bellies. And this is how the world still is. Just look around. The innocent still die from violence. We only have to look to last week's tragedy. We have these blue candles, and they remind us that we are to await in joyful anticipation. Our church calendar reflects the full range of human emotions in our church seasons, and yet our lives do not always coordinate. I have no idea what the parents in Newton are feeling. I can't imagine what it'll be like for them to look at their Christmas trees and see wrapped presents that should be opened by excited children. I can't imagine what the displaced people from Hurricane Sandy feel and how they will ever muster up hope in the face of what they have lost. My God, how are we to make sense of this? How are we to understand God working in our lives? So why did I give you a history lesson of the Philippines? Why am I holding the book of Hebrews accountable? Why am I reminding you that the world is cruel when you already know that? I tell you because real, lasting hope is hope that can stand in the face of chaos. If we romanticize our situation, our hope will be just as idealistic. But life is confusing. The Bible is confusing. Our problems are complicated. And our hope is complicated. Our hope is as complicated as the entire universe being contained inside the womb of a virgin. Last Wednesday evening at All Souls, I gazed upon images of the universe. One moment I was gazing upon the Milky Way galaxy, and the next moment I was looking at rushing water in Alaska. One moment I was looking at a star dying, and the next moment I was looking at molten lava bursting forth from the middle of the ocean. It was so powerful. And I imagine all of that power was inside of her. Then the slideshow cut to images of Mary receiving the terrifying news from the angel Gabriel. This was not just something that God did to her. So what was it like to respond, to accept? As I sat in the cold, dark sanctuary, my mind returned to the Philippines. In the slums, thousands of shanty huts literally share the same source of power. Thousands of wires are tangled in this huge clump of black, it looks like intestines. I mean, you look at these blue ribbons, that's what power lines are supposed to look like. But this would just be a mass bigger than the size of our doorway. And they would dangle there in the middle of these alleyways by a thread. And so it is no surprise that they break, and every year they kill someone, and usually they strike children. And when they break, live wires are flying all over the place. And again, I imagine Mary accepting the call to carry the God child, and that it was like reaching out and grabbing hold of one of these wires. All of the electricity running through her body. This is what we are called to do. We are called to reach out and grab one of these wires. Each one of us is called to experience and know God through our bodies. I do not think, I do not feel, I have no emotions, I have no intellect or knowledge or experience, except that which is mediated through my body. Who am I without my body? Who are we? Who am I if my mind is implanted in Reverend Kristen's body? I don't know. I was watching this television show the other day on zombies. And some of the characters said that zombies are only a shell of a human. And it led me to think about what is essential to being human. Disney shows us talking cats and dogs, and we think that they're human because they think and speak in some sophisticated language. And then we look at zombies, who look like people, but act like something else. Maybe this seems like a pointless quest, but our lives have been built around privileging souls and minds. What about the bodies? And here is the Word made flesh, whose incarnation promoted the status of the body. And in the face of all of the madness, the sacredness of the body gives me hope. When we privilege our intellect as the way, the path to know God, rather than through our bodies, we undermine Filipino experiences, we risk undermining women's experiences, we undermine babies' experiences. A few weeks ago, Bishop Mark Andrus spoke about the war on the mentally ill. How might God's incarnation validate their spiritual experiences? Just because some of them will never be able to take a confirmation class, an assent to a set of beliefs, does not preclude them from knowing God's love. My grandmother has Alzheimer's. Does she not experience God's grace through the Eucharist, even though she has forgotten what it means? What affects the body affects our spirits. There is no separation. God's incarnation is not some flat materialism. It is concrete hope.